Today we begin a new term of our small group ministry, and we're very excited about this new season of small groups. And so I just want to say a word or two about that as we get started. We're doing small groups a bit differently this time. We're meeting now twice per month on Sunday afternoons, the second and the fourth Sunday of the month. And also a little different, and this is especially important for our small group leaders, there are no handouts for you to pick up in the office this time, but instead we've distributed the handouts among the pews. And so if you don't have a handout for today's sermon, let me encourage you to tap someone on the shoulder and make sure that you get one. I think they're on the end of all the pews this morning. The handout will help you in following along with the sermon, and then also will serve as a springboard for the small group discussions that will be taking place throughout the area this afternoon. On the back side of that sheet, there are all of the locations and times of our 17 small groups, and then also the group that meets here at the building. And that information, I hope, is accurate. I know there is at least one typo. Group number one meets at 464 Broadmoor, rather than the address that you see listed. So make sure you go to the right house today. If you're in group number one, it's 464 Broadmoor, and so make sure that you note that that correction. And so if you've not made plans to be a part of a small group today, there are still lots of opportunities for you to join a group. And so you can look at these places and times and the facilitators that are over each of those groups, and we want to encourage you to be a part of one of these today. We live in an age today that is somewhat of, might be characterized as a relational paradox. We live in a culture that is perhaps as connected as we have ever been as a human species, thanks to information technology, the internet, and social networking. We are perhaps, we might even say, overly connected. And yet, at the same time, it seems that as a culture, more people today are feeling a sense of aloneness than ever before. Let me share with you some information that proves this fact, I think. There was an article in 2012 in April in the New Yorker called The Disconnect by Nathan Heller, and he shares these statistics. In 1950, 4 million people in our country lived alone. That number today is almost 8 times as many, at 31 million. Americans today are getting married later than ever. On average, American males get married for the first time at age 28 in today's culture. Many people actually are intentionally postponing marriage and intentionally remaining single in our current world. Today, 50% of U.S. residents are single, and nearly one-third of all U.S. households only have one resident. Again, thanks to the internet and social networking, the boundary between social life and isolation is becoming dissolved. Technology has helped many of us feel less lonely, but ironically, we're no less alone than ever before. Many people today feel very proud about their individualistic freedoms, and yet we're starved for relational contact. Two U.S. psychologists did some tests and some research in 2001 that showed that the expectation of isolation that so many Americans have in this hyper-individualistic culture that we live in reduces, in fact, willpower within ourselves and perseverance, and makes it harder to regulate our behavior. Lonely middle-aged adults tend to drink more alcohol, have unhealthier diets, and take less exercise than the socially connected among us. Drug abuse and bulimia are on the rise among those that also identify themselves as being lonely. If the proverb idle hands are the devil's workshop is true, I would suggest that isolation is the devil's playground. God created us, you and me, to be relational and social beings. He recognized from the very beginning it's not good that man should be alone, Genesis 2 and verse 18. I think we all know that intuitively. Somewhere within the recesses of our own spirits, we know that we need desperately a sense of togetherness, a sense of community, a life that is shared together. Now, that reality is explored in numerous places in the Bible, but I just want to look at one verse today. So if you've not already done so, turn in your Bible to 1 Thessalonians chapter number 2, and we're going to focus in this morning on verse number 8. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse number 8. In the first place, I want you to notice this morning that we all have a desire for life together. We all have that desire. It's a universal longing that we all have. In the first part of this verse, Paul, as he writes to a gathering of Christians that he felt so connected with, he says, "So being affectionately desirous of you," that's the way the ESV translates it, "being affectionately desirous of you." Paul shows by this language, affectionately desirous, that he shared this desire to be connected to and share life with other believers. The word that is translated by the ESV, affectionately desirous, is a notoriously difficult word to translate. The word literally has the meaning of to have kind feelings for or to actually long for someone. In fact, this same Greek word has been discovered by archaeologists on a grave inscription that describes the feeling of parents that are yearning in their grief for their dead, buried child, having deep affection and great attraction, longing to be with their child that has now died. Do you hear in that the intensity of emotion, the intensity of the desire that we have within us to be connected to each other, to be connected in community, to share life together? But this intense universal desire that we all have is all too often an unmet expectation. It's so ironic that in our overly connected world today, so many of us feel so disconnected from authentic relationships with one another. We are literally being starved to death for relationships, for connection. And what is so ironic about that is we all know that. We have that universal longing, and yet it's an unmet expectation because so many of us in our overly individualistic culture are becoming increasingly afraid to take the risk of authentic relationships because there's risk involved. There's risk that the relationship may not be all that you'd hope for. There's risk that if you open yourself up to someone else that you might be hurt by it. There's a legitimate risk there. And too many of us are becoming increasingly afraid to take those risks. Over the years, I've heard so many stories in doing ministry of people that are starved for relationship, even in the church. And that there's so many people among us in the church that seem to never get connected with anybody else in the church. And we'll sit in a pew among people that we profess to share the same faith with and have so much in common with and yet not really know one another. And so if you're not connected, many of us will fall away and stop attending church because we just never seemed to fit in. We never seemed to make any real deep relationship with other believers. It is so ironic that we have this universal need, and yet it is so often an unmet expectation, especially when it comes to the church. But the need for community has never been greater, and yet so often is not met, because we don't seem to realize that if we're going to share life together, it requires something of us. It requires something of you. We have this universal longing, and yet it's often, there's the paradox of it's an unmet expectation. Why? Because it's gonna, if you're going to have this life together, it requires something of you. Paul literally says it here in verse number 8. He says, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel. Now, is it important to share the gospel with people? You better believe it. But I want you to focus in on what he's really getting at here. We were ready, we were eager, some translations say. We were determined to share with you not only the gospel, but our lives as well. What does life together require? Paul, in this phrase, demonstrates that life together requires three things from you. It requires determination, it requires a mutual participation, and thirdly, it requires transparency. Notice these three. In the first place, what does life shared together require? It requires determination. Paul says we were ready. The NIV says we were delighted to share not only the gospel, but our lives with each other. The word that is translated delighted or ready or eager here literally means to be gladly determined. You see, if you're going to experience authentic relationships and community in the church, if you're going to share this life together with other believers, it means you're going to have to take some risks. You're going to have to put yourself out there. You can't wait for others to come to you. You've got to be willing to go to others. Life together with other believers will not just happen. If you just show up at a church and you come and you sit faithfully in a pew, but you stay to yourself, don't expect that that longing in your heart is going to be met. Because it's going to require some determination on your part that you are going to put yourself out there and you're going to share life with someone else. You got to be determined about it. Number two, it requires a mutual participation. He says, we were delighted, we were determined to share our life with you, but not only were we determined, notice, we were going to share it. We were determined to share life together. Look at this idea of sharing life together. Paul was interested in sharing the gospel with people. That is our only hope. The only way we can be saved is by the message of Jesus. But there are lots of people that encounter the gospel that then fall away from community of believers because they never got connected with anything more than their relationship with God. They never got connected with other believers. Now, what I want to suggest to you is that I think what is true of us is that we are such social and relational beings that if you're not connected with other people that share faith, the chances of you maintaining your relationship with God are very, very slim. Because we need the encouragement we receive from each other. We've got to be connected with one another. We've got to share the gospel together, and we've got to share our lives together. And that is a mutual kind of thing. The word share here means, here's the way that one Greek dictionary defined this Greek word. To give someone something by which the giver retains one part and the receiver another part so that they share in the matter. That's just a fancy definition for the word share. If you're going to share something, that means I have a part in it, but then I share a part of it with you. What does it mean to share life? It means I experience my life, but I don't keep my life in isolation. I'm willing to open up my life and share a part of my life with you. And it is a reciprocal kind of thing. It is a mutual kind of thing. You share life with me, and I share life with you. This is the beauty of community. It requires that I open up my life, that I'm willing to share a part of myself with you and you with me. Life together is a give and a take. But too often we desire the warmth of the relationships in the church that can be given to us, but we're not willing to ask, what am I doing to contribute toward the connection? What am I doing to put myself out there? What am I doing to share my life with others? It's going to require not only determination, but it's also going to require a mutual sharing, a participation. But thirdly, it requires transparency. He says, we were glad, we were determined, we were delighted to share our lives, not only the gospel, but our lives. Now, that's the way that many translations will give it. The King James Version says, share our souls with one another. The word that is used here by Paul is a word that doesn't quite mean soul, and it doesn't even really quite mean life. What it means is the whole personality of a person. We were willing to share our entire personalities with one another. You see, to really experience the beauty of sharing life together, we have to be real with each other and open up our incomplete selves to one another. We've got to be transparent with each other. But in order to be transparent with one another, you got to build trust. I mean, none of us, I think, are willing to completely open up our entire personalities to someone we don't trust with that gift. So trust has to be built. Confidence has to be established. This kind of transparency, the beauty of the desire we have for life shared together that requires a determination, a mutual participation, and requires transparency, does not happen overnight. So we move now to the third point. What does life together look like then? Paul says, because, verse number 8, the ESV, because you had become very dear to us. What does life together look like? Life together looks like something that is always in process. It is an emerging kind of thing. Here's what I mean by that. Paul says, because you had become very dear to us. The word here, become, is a word that in the original that means to come into being, such as through the process of birth, to be born, to come into existence, to be created. This is not something that happens with the wave of a hand or by the snapping of a finger or through one or two small group meetings. This is something that happens over time as confidence is established, as trust is built. Deep community and togetherness will not happen automatically. I think a lot of us have the unreasonable expectation that we know the kind of deep community that should exist in the church, and somehow we think that it should just be there. And it should just happen automatically. And then when it's not there, I'm disappointed and discouraged and I feel down on the church. Well, guess what? Paul says this is something that's becoming. Because you had become very dear to us. This kind of community will never happen without some bumps in the road. Some relational bumps. It will not happen without a lot of patience and tolerance and forgiveness toward each other. We're going to mess up along the way. There are going to be some relational hiccups down the road. But we've got to understand that and realize we are an emerging community. We are a community in the process of becoming dear to each other. But now notice he says, not only is it an emerging process, but he says you became dear to us. When Paul says that you'd become dear to us, he uses an adjective here that is very much akin to the Greek noun agape. The Greek word agape is often translated love, but that doesn't really capture the beauty and the depth of this word. Agape has the idea of not just warm feelings that you have for someone, but instead it captures the idea of being willing to be self-sacrificing, to be willing to sacrifice your first inclinations, your desires, your perspectives, sacrifice so much for the benefit of someone else. You see, it doesn't always have to do with warm feelings, but instead it has to do with being self-sacrificing for the betterment of the group. So when Paul says you'd become dear to us, he's talking about a self-sacrificing kind of love, a self-giving of love. And you see that in the context. Paul says back in verse 7, you'd become so dear to us, he says, it was almost like you were my children and I was a mother to you. The kind of relationship that he describes is described like the gentleness of a nursing mother. And then in verse 11, He indicates the depth of this relationship being like the strong intention and the deep devotion and hard work of a providing father. It's like a parental kind of relationship. If we're to nurture and become dear to each other and share life together, we've got to realize this is something that is being born. It is coming into process. It is something that must be nurtured. This community and this togetherness and this love of authentic relationships and experiencing life together is not something that happens overnight. It is something that comes into being by the careful care of one another being devoted to the group. Of me being devoted to you and you being devoted to me, having a strong obligation over one another's spiritual and relational health, like parents watching over children. We must be vigilant to watch over our togetherness and our community and our groups as we share life together. A shared life together is something we all desire. And if that need is ever to be met, we must realize it requires something of all of us: determination, a mutual participation, and transparency. But if we're to ever get there, we've got to be realistic about what this thing looks like. It looks like something that is always in process. So let's be tolerant and loving and accepting of each other and be self-sacrificing and watch over the health of the community like the care of a parent over a child. If we're going to share life together, it means we've got to get involved in one another's lives and get to know each other. And so today in our small groups, that's what we're going to do. In our small groups, we're going to spend some time on some activities that are very light and very fun, but they're not inconsequential. They're very important, because the more that we can laugh together, the more we can open our lives up to one another, the more we can get to know each other on a deeper and better level, the more confidence will be established, the more trust will be built, and the more we'll be willing to really share our lives together and really find what we're all looking for: the depth of real spiritual relationships as we encourage each other in our devotion to the cause of Christ and our devotion to our love for God. And so today is all about getting to know each other better. And so I want to encourage you to be a part of one of these groups where you can do just that. This morning, let me ask you, are you connected to the body of believers? Or are you just trying to live out your Christian life by yourself? If you're trying to do it in isolation, you're in a bad place, because you're not going to be able to do it alone. We should not forsake, the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews 10, our gathering together, as the habit of some is. Why? Because we need to encourage each other all the more as we see the day drawing near. We need to consider how to stir up one another to love and to good works, to encourage each other to continue to remain faithful, to continue to strive and press on in the midst of a perverse and dark generation, to shine as lights in our world. And we can do that whenever we develop these deep relationships of accountability and love and concern for each other as we help one another to be all that God wants us to be. This morning, if you're not a part of that kind of community, we encourage you to consider joining the family of God. You say, how do I do that? Well, you can't do it on your own. God will adopt you. How does God adopt you? He adopts you whenever you surrender to His Son in belief, confession, repentance, and baptism. And when you're joined with Christ in that way, choosing to put aside your selfish, individualistic life and open your life up to Christ coming in and open your life up to relationships with of loving your neighbor as yourself. And as you do that and practice a life of self-denial where you give your life away in service to God and to others, that's when you find real purpose and meaning. And if we can help you toward discovering that and obeying Jesus Christ, we'd love to do that. Or if you need prayers of encouragement, we've got shepherds of the flock that'll be down here and also out those double doors in the library. If you need private prayer, if we can help you in your walk with God, won't you come forward as we stand together and as we sing together?